Thank you for downloading this podcast from Farrer & Co. My name is Alice Yandel and I'm a partner in the employment team and the safeguarding unit at Farrer's. I'm also delighted to be joined here today by my colleague Sophia Coles, an associate in the team.
Hello, great to be here. So our conversation today is part of an ongoing series relating to supporting SEND pupils in mainstream schools, and in particular those with an ASD and or ADHD diagnosis.
This is an area where we're certainly seeing an increasing number of queries and where schools are facing particularly challenging or complex issues. In our first session, an online webinar, which some listeners out there may have joined, we spoke to experts about the conditions themselves, how they present, what this means for children in schools, and the support available to parents and families. We also looked at the legal framework applicable to schools seeking to support and accommodate students with these conditions, the EHCP process, and I talk through some practical matters for schools to think about in this context. Needless to say, as lawyers, we often get involved when schools are facing particularly challenging situations. For example, when, for whatever reason, relationships between parents or the local authority have broken down, or matters have become contentious or litigious. At this stage, these situations can be very disruptive for staff and pupils alike, and managing them can become time-consuming and costly. Although I'm pleased to say this is neither the norm nor inevitable. And during the webinar, Dr. Martin Bolton, the High Master at Manchester Grammar School, shared his thoughts on ways in which schools can best support pupils with ASD or ADHD, and his reflections embedding a positive approach to SEND within the school. And I'm really delighted to say that Martin is with us again today to take this part of the conversation forward. There were lots of questions arising from your presentation, Martin, so we were really keen to continue that discussion and hopefully answer some of those questions today. Thank you so much for being here. Would you like to start off perhaps by introducing yourself briefly and your role at MGS?
Hello. I have the grand title of High Master, which in all other contexts means head teacher. I've been at the Manchester Grammar School as head for 10 years, but I was also a pupil at the school during my sixth form years in the 1980s. The school itself was founded in 1515 to educate the poor boys of Manchester in godliness and good learning.
Great. We're delighted that you're here today. As we've explained, we're talking about SEND. So just to set the scene a little bit, although the statistical picture is not completely clear, the current estimates are that 1 in 100 children in the UK have an ASD diagnosis. And the Lancet and NICE, which is the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, suggest an incident rate of 5% in children for ADHD. And anecdotally, we are seeing an increasing number of queries from schools which relate to students who have an ADHD or ASD diagnosis. And we sense a growing awareness about these matters in schools and society more broadly. What is your experience at MGS on these issues?
So we have 184 pupils who'd be defined as having a disability as per the 2010 Equality Act. There are 1,650 pupils in the school. And the specific areas break down roughly as follows. So ADHD, 27 pupils, ASD, 39, dyslexia, 50, dyspraxia, 10, specific learning difficulties, 29, and then other categories would amount to about 30. Those numbers obviously fluctuate a little bit from year to year, but that's a fairly good snapshot of where we'd be at any one time.
And of those students, how many approximately will have an EHCP in place?
So presently three pupils have an EHCP plan, which means in practice we receive some funding to part meet their needs.
Okay, and can you talk us briefly through what support there is in place for these students and how that's structured?
So rather than single out the EHCP pupils specifically, I think it makes more sense to discuss our broader cohort, try to explain how our approach is applied by all staff rather than having a SEND department approach. And the line we try to use is that every day in every lesson, reasonable adjustments are made. It really must not just be seen as something associated with the exams. We have a fairly large SEND department with specialists, but the key to success is ensuring that the pupil guides our approach and all staff look at how we can remove barriers and support pupils. So we're trying to ensure that pupils feel that they're allowed to make mistakes. They can ask for help. They're not ridiculed by staff or other pupils for needing help, and that teachers are willing to give up the time to help them. Key to all of this are our pupil profiles. I'll say a little bit more about that later.
And just thinking about assessment, Martin, one of the things you talked about on our earlier webinar was a bit about the process you adopt there at MGS. Do you mind talking us briefly through that and any practical tips that you have for schools, perhaps what's worked well for you and things that have worked not so well in that context?
So we do screening with all pupils, not just those we think might have needs. This traditionally has been done in year 9, but we're changing that to the start of year 7. And for boys in our own junior school, we're going to screen at the end of year 6. And the key thing here is we want to pick things up before they start to have an impact on a pupil's progress, which is why we've made this change to bring things earlier. Of course, we do various other tests throughout a pupil's time in the school if teachers, parents or pupils themselves think there might be a need. But we do that screening. Screening's done online. It's similar in its application to sort of a mid-year test that most schools already do. And there are a number of screening tests available, and it's worth working with the one that you think best suits your setting. We also have staff qualified to administer two very specific tests. So that's the ADOS-2 test for autism and the QB test for ADHD. And we felt it was worth getting some of our staff trained up to be able to do those particular tests, mainly because there are a long wait list sometimes to get those tests done.
And you said it's more than just thinking about assessment. So in terms of supporting students during their whole school life, what have you seen work well?
So the key thing for us is an individual profile for each pupil. These are written by the pupils themselves with support, and they're given to all of the pupils' teachers. So in essence, it's a checklist of what works and doesn't work for them. Particularly powerful because it details exactly what the pupils' needs are and doesn't get into any of the generalised approach for a particular condition. So the categories we have are fairly simple, actually. What are the academic barriers to learning? Are there any other barriers? Question ways that you can support me and things I find helpful. And then two sections, which is please try to, and the pupil will list those things. And then please try not to do another set of things. It might be worth me going through in detail one of these profiles. In a way, this is all that's needed for a teacher to make adjustments. And it's simple and the pupil's in control of what happens. And the most important thing, it's about every single teacher making adjustments rather than a SEND department making adjustments. So it really does have an impact on pupils' outcomes. So here's an example of one of our pupils. So the first section is barriers to learning, academic barriers. And these are all this pupil's own words. So my processing speeds are slightly slower than my peers, so I take longer to complete work, especially multi-step mathematical problems. This is especially true in practical activities where I need to deliberately and consciously plan my actions and movements before I execute them. The second point on this, my autism means that I'm rarely satisfied that a given piece of work is complete or completed to a high enough standard, even with high marks. I've become better at stopping myself and setting time limits for work. So those are the academic barriers. The other barriers that this pupil lists are the busy environment, academic pressure, and my awareness of my differences from my peers means I find school days very difficult and anxiety provoking. I find group work or presentations very uncomfortable and would prefer to submit a written assignment. Final one in this section, my gross motor skill coordination is poorer than that of my peers, so I sometimes struggle in practicals and in moving around, especially on stairs. So the next section, which is ways to support me, what I find helpful, and this is the please try to. So please try to smile and be reassuring. This makes the most difference out of anything and can redeem a bad day. Give a time limit for homework or classwork and make expectations clear, especially for open-ended tasks. Explain if certain tasks are optional and how much they need to be prioritised. Give notice if there'll be a change to the lesson, e.g. a different room than normal, a cover lesson, etc., if at all possible. Give notice of practical work to allow me to read the practical procedure beforehand. Allow me extra time for processing, especially for calculations, mathematical problems and physical activities. Allow me to leave the class 5 minutes before the bell so I can go to the next lesson when the corridors are quieter. Allow me to leave class if I'm becoming very upset or distressed so I can go to the SEND department. Please understand that I may stutter when I'm anxious and may need some more time to finish a sentence. So then we go on to ways to support me, what I find helpful. The second section, which is this is the please try not to. and these are fairly simple actually, but please do not use sarcasm in feedback, as I find it very difficult to tell if you're being honest or sarcastic. Please try not to shout if possible. Please try not to give surprise tests or assessments. So I think that probably gives a sense of the sort of thing. I think the key thing here, it's in the pupil's own voice. It's you wouldn't be able to pick that up from a diagnosis booklet on what to do with an autistic child. But the fact that it's been written by the pupil means it's very tailored to them. I think it also has a much greater impact with members of staff, because they will read that. And it's very easy from that list of things to adapt the way you teach in a really simple way that you know is focused on that individual pupil.
Can I just ask, Martin, how often do you review that with the pupil?
So, I mean, that would be ongoing, really. I mean, that particular pupil's in year 13 at the moment, so about to go to university, and that will have developed as they've gone through the school. So you can see as they've moved into doing more mathematical and science subjects, that has the flavour of that, and it will have been slightly different earlier on. So that will certainly get reviewed annually, but it's the SEND department will sit down and they'll look at it and say, what do we need to write? And there'll be support in getting that written. And obviously younger pupils might need more support in getting that pupil profile written. But that conversation in itself, of a dialogue between either a tutor or one of the SEND department and an individual pupil to say, what do I need, really helps to bring out what the best support we can give, rather than put a one-size-fits-all approach to ADHD or autism or whatever it is we're looking at. And I think it's much easier for a teacher just to look at that sort of list and think, how do I adapt my lessons, rather than you get a notice on a information system that says this pupil has autism. And teachers don't necessarily know what to do with that. Now, obviously, we do need to train teachers, but this is a really simple way of saying, well, it's a very specific, this is what this pupil needs. So we find that works really well, and I'd really recommend it. I'm happy to share some of the blank forms, and I can even share that copy with people if they'd like to adopt that, because we think it's worked really, really well for us.
Thanks, Martin. That'd be great.
Yeah. And one of the questions, talking about specialist provision, one of the questions that came up during the webinar was, what does pupil provision from specialist teachers look like at MGS? Do you have peripatetic delivery, one-on-one small groups, etc.? So if you could unpack that a little bit, that'd be really helpful.
Sure. So our department, I mean, it's developed over sort of certainly the 10 years I've been here, but we have a head of department, Senko, who assesses for access arrangements. She does teach, but a small number of periods. In addition to the head of the department, there are two full-time specialist teachers who are also SPLD assessors. We have one full-time ASD specialist, one full-time TA, and one part-time SEND English specialist. So it's a department of five and a half people. The way of working depends entirely on the needs of the pupil. So we have a SEND department with three classrooms and two offices. Boys can drop in and work there, or support could be out in a classroom. But the department's a hive of activity throughout the day, and it's also a quiet and a safe space for pupils. And we've grown the number of rooms for that to enable that to happen. And that's been incredibly successful. And often, you know, SEND kids will take their mates who don't have a SEND profile, and they'll just do stuff at lunchtime, play games or whatever it is. But it does become this very safe space for them. And if the lesson's becoming difficult, they know they can always remove themselves and head over there for some support. So just allocating some space within the school, making it prominent. It doesn't need to, you know, it mustn't be hidden away. In fact, it must be part of everything, you know, what your school does. It's been very helpful and gives confidence to those pupils as well.
That sounds amazing that they're bringing their friends along. You know, it's really their own space. And just to link back to assessments, which we touched on earlier, this was a question that came up in the webinar as well, which is whether extra time for pupils with ASD was an automatic provision.
So no, extra time for any pupils determined by their normal way of working and history of need. So it's assessed for each pupil on a pupil by pupil basis. So no, we don't make any assumptions with that. Every child will have an assessment of their need and normal way of working, and that will then inform what we do in terms of putting in for extra time.
Okay, great. And so we're going to move on now to look a bit about your teaching staff and how we best support them. So according to research done by the National Autism Society and I'm Ambitious About Autism, 60% of classroom teachers stated that they didn't feel that they'd received adequate training to teach students with autism. What's your experience at MGS in terms of how you support your teachers?
So I think probably from the pupil profile you'll see, we don't believe there's a one-size-fits-all approach for any individual child. And that actually the most important thing you can do with teachers is have an individualized approach for an individual. And we found the pupil profile makes it very easy teachers to make necessary adjustments. And those adjustments are agreed by the pupil when writing the profile. So again, that means that in a sense, I suppose, there is an element of training for every single teacher every time they get one of the profiles, because they will see the adjustments that are needed for that pupil. And they may find another pupil has a slightly different profile, but they then get a sense of those differences. But everything's always just tailored to the individual, which we feel is without doubt the best way to deliver the right adjustments, but also is probably the simplest way to train and for teachers to engage.
And do you find that they work, so your kind of classroom teachers work quite closely with the SEN department in terms of thinking about identifying potential specific areas of training or areas where they feel they need a little bit of further support on that?
So our SEN staff do training with individuals. They'll also do some whole school training as well. We also have a really well populated SharePoint site, and that's got lots of documents, but also training materials for teachers to use. And so if a teacher comes and says, well, I'm not sure about how X, Y or Z works, we can guide them to that SharePoint site, and that will be always available sort of there. So building up those kind of resources is a really helpful and sensible way to do some of that training work.
Sounds brilliant. And you mentioned at the start of the podcast that you've obviously invested in training a number of your staff members in terms of the diagnosis process for ADHD and autism. One of the things that we hear kind of day in, day out from our clients is struggling to identify experts to assist with coming into schools and supporting, whether that's kind of SALTs or Ed Sykes and so on. Where would you recommend schools and parents look for advice and guidance on these types of issues?
So I think the lesson we've learned is the best approach is to build specialism within your own school. So the first thing to say is you must resource your department. It shouldn't be seen as an add-on. It should be seen as a key part of what you do. And I think actually we've built a very good reputation for this. And parents with children with SEND diagnoses will shout about how wonderful your school is if they do it well. And I think most parents would say, well, if they're doing that well, they're probably doing everything else well. So we think that investment is not only valuable for the individual pupils, but should be seen as something that's really valuable to your school and its reputation. So visit other schools, find the schools that are doing this well, go and visit them, and maybe build a network with local schools. So that maybe one a school locally to you has an assessor in one particular area, but certainly you can share best practice with local schools. We employed two of our staff straight from university. They both had studied psychology and were keen to work in this area, and they've simply been brilliant. Don't always see it as a route where a teacher goes into SEND somewhere in their career. You can go out and find specialists to come and work in your school, and it can be a really attractive job because it's just so rewarding when it works well.
Yeah, sounds amazing. And we touched on EHCPs earlier, and another thing we hear quite often from schools is that they have very little or no communication with the local authority in relation to students on their role who have those plans in place. Do you have any advice or guidance about working effectively with the local authority?
I mean, I think you've just got to build your relationships with them. Their real problem is they have very high rates of staff turnover, so they find this difficult. If you can try to understand those difficulties as well as your own difficulties and just build as positive a relationship as you can with them, they genuinely do want to help, but they're doing that on limited resources. So, yeah, but the relationships you have with them, try and make them the best they can be.
And moving now to look a bit about behaviour in terms of day-to-day school life. Obviously, managing behaviour that's disruptive is something that, all schools will have to deal with day in, day out. But of course, there are additional considerations where a child's behavioural reactions are going to be connected to a particular medical condition, and in particular those that we've spoken about. Have you got any thoughts or tips to schools on this and how to kind of bring the best out of those students from a behaviour perspective?
So I think good communication between the SEND team, between pastoral staff and teachers is key. It's probably worth trying to think ahead as to where problems might arise and anticipate potential triggers. I suppose like all behaviour management, it just requires work and forward thinking. Doesn't mean it's not difficult. I think it is key. Our SEND department's such an integral part of the school. It's not seen as an add-on in any way. So the staff in the SEND department do just work with the pastoral team, with individual teachers, particularly in this area.
I think your pupil plan, Martin, to me sounds like a really good way of kind of, you know, bringing out kind of the potential triggers for these pupils. So you're kind of preempting what those are to potentially try and avoid the behaviour in the first place. So I think that's a really, really valuable takeaway from this podcast.
Yeah, and, I'd agree with that. Yeah.
And sort of relatedly, from some of the cases that we've advised on, we've seen how educating other students and parents of other students can play an important role in helping avoid disagreements or unhelpful reactions from other students, which could be upsetting or confusing for the student in question or needlessly escalate situations. Is that something you've had any experience of at MGS?
So we've got a really open culture about SEND here. You know, we talk to pupils. People are generally very open about their needs. And now we find actually that their peers more often than not will be supportive rather than problematic. We talk about neurodiversity in PHSC and always in a positive light. So I think it's about building that culture where SEND's not something to be hidden away. It's central to part of the school. And these are really great kids and they just need support in some way, in some part of their of their profile in lessons, which, I mean, to be frank, we all do at times. So I think, yeah, seeing it as being core to the how you define your school really helps.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, really valuable, Martin. I think lots of lessons for all of us to take away here. Thank you so much for sharing your insights on this, you know, really important and evolving area. I hope the listeners have found this as useful as Sophia and I have done, and there's clearly so much to say and discuss on this topic, and certainly we're proposing to run some further sessions on this, so very much watch this space. But in the meantime, if you've got any questions or queries, do feel free to get in touch with either Sophia or myself, and our contact details will be in the podcast information along with links to our existing resources, including our school report briefing. But just leaves me to say thank you so much again, Martin. That's been fantastic.
No, thanks very much.